Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into Boston Sports Original WEEI. It is surprising, I bet, to hear my voice this morning. Normally, I would be on Football Sunday here on WEEI, but today, bit of a schedule change. I get to go to the game today, so I had to come in a little early. Me and Dan swapped, so Dan will be on the Football Sunday with Arkan and Mego. So this morning, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., it's Shyam, joined by my remote friend, John Lyons. Lyons, what's up, bud?
Shyam, how are you, man?
I'm good. It's a chilly day here in New England as the New England Patriots play their season finale against the Buffalo Bills this afternoon, or I should say the second line of the Buffalo Bills this afternoon. John, my initial question right off the bat is, I'm curious where you stand currently on if Gerard Mayo is safe as the Patriots head coach and if he will be back next season, because I think that's been one of the biggest topics all week long. It's kind of been where he's at. You heard the Jelani Tavai comments on the Greg Hill Show on Friday. And then Mayo had to come out in his press conference just, you know, a couple hours later and be like, yeah, we've handled that internally. Is there issues now in this locker room? Where do you currently stand on Gerard Mayo's future with the franchise?
Yeah, so Shyam, I've been back and forth on this topic a lot throughout the season because, in fairness to Mayo, he took over one of the worst rosters in the NFL. Not only is he a rookie head coach, you have a rookie GM, a bunch of rookies essentially on the coaching staff and in this organization, bunch of contributing players that are rookies or second-year guys. So he's been put in a tough spot. And where I've kind of landed on it, though, Shyam, is if the Patriots really feel they can get Mike Vrabel or they can get Brian Flores, I think they're going to make the move and they're going to get one of those two guys who are guys with New England ties that have won Super Bowls here. Vrabel is a player, Flores is a coach, but also have successful head coaching experience in the past. So I think if they can get one of those two guys, they're going to make the move and move on from Gerard Mayo. However, if they don't think they can get one of those guys, I think we're going to see Mayo back next year with a revamped staff around him.
Yeah, see, my thought is if you're if you have a guy in mind that you'd be interested in talking to as the new Patriots head coach, like, you should be doing a full ranged interview process. You should not, like, this cannot be like what you did just a year ago, which is fire Bill, do zero interviews, and then just hire Brian Flores, right? Like, it's if you like Vrabel, great, but we need to interview other people. And in my opinion, I have come around kind of on this. I, for the longest time, didn't believe you should fire Gerard Mayo. I felt like he was put in a no-win situation for a guy that had no experience. Like, it was just impossible. And then I saw how things have unfolded. I feel like he's starting to lose the locker room a little bit between, like, the comments from Keon White not too long ago now. I just feel like there are more things going on than just losing on the football field. And that, to me, is where I start to draw the line. And so I think the Patriots need to do a full-on search. Like, they need to look for a new guy. I would prefer them focus on offensive guys. The two guys you brought up are both defensive guys. Yep. I like Vrabel, but, like, in today's NFL, man, it's so hard to have the CEO head coach or the defensive-minded head coach, because offensive coordinators just constantly move on. They get good, and if your team is good, they're generally good, and they go find head coaching jobs elsewhere, and then you have to bring in a new play caller and do it all again. And so I just, especially in the early years of Drake May, for me, if you're going to move on from Gerard Mayo, you should be targeting the guys like Ben Johnson, like Liam Cohen, guys of that ilk that call plays and that can help your young quarterback, the best player on your team, get better.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Shyam, that offensive coaches drive a lot of this hiring, or these hiring cycles, I should say. I think with a guy like Vrabel or even Flores, a big question for me, and I like both of those guys, I'd be happy with either of those guys as head coach, who's your offensive coordinator going to be? So if it's going to be Josh McDaniels, a guy that you know is probably not going to be a head coach again and will stick around and can develop Drake May and call a good offense, great. If they want to keep Alex Van Pelt, another guy who I think you know is probably not going to get a head coaching job anytime soon, then fine. But to your point, you want to have a structure in place where you're not changing offenses every year. I mean, think about a guy like Hunter Henryshein. He's been here 4 years. He's had four different offensive coordinators. Do you really want to do that? Not just to him specifically, but to so many of these young players that you're counting on to build around in the coming years.
Yeah, and actually, a little bit of breaking news, too. Speaking of offensive coordinators, the Browns have officially fired Ken Dorsey and Andy Dickerson, their offensive line coach and offensive coordinator today. So
I bet they regret firing AVP last year. And Ken Dorsey, a guy, too, that the Bills fired to promote Joe Brady.
Correct, and Brady's had a lot of success with Josh Allen and the Bills. So I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity here for coach turnover. I wouldn't be shocked if Stefanski ends up finding the door here in the next day or so. Clearly, the Browns are already interested in making moves. They fire their offensive coordinator. Stefanski runs that offense. Like, he is in charge.
Yeah. And that was one of the knocks on Van Pelt, right, when he came here, that it was really Stefanski running the offense and calling things. And the Van Pelt thing, Shime, to me, is kind of tricky because you and I and many people were critical of him, especially earlier in the season, and I think he's had some missteps throughout the season. He's talked about that as well. But this is a guy, you look at this coaching staff, I think he's done the best job of anyone on the staff. Drake May's development has been the best part about this football team. The offense has been better than it was a year ago, not in every category, but in several categories, and you can kind of see some progress there with some of the things. But again, you still have these missteps, that backwards pass fiasco against Buffalo, the weird trick play that was a fumble against the Chargers, right? Like, so there's still things there, but I think AVP is the guy that they're in the trickiest spot with, because if they were to just move on from AVP and keep everyone else, I'd look at that as a fall guy situation. But if they move on from Gerard Mayo, then I'm going to sit there and say, man, I wonder what they're going to do with Drake May's development now, because we're talking about a second-year quarterback obviously going into next year with maybe his second offensive coordinator in 2 years.
Yeah, AVP didn't blow you away, but he didn't make any horrid mistakes throughout the year, right?
Like, and I think their offense, too, is so devoid of talent that you only had limited expectations. Like, look, they managed the first half poorly against Seattle, against Miami, against a couple other teams as well. And I mentioned the play-calling missteps. But on the whole, you look at the offense, the defense, the special teams, I think the offense has made the most progress overall from the time they started in late July to now.
Yeah, and most importantly, the guy on the offense that matters the most has made strides in the right direction in Drake May. And that, to me, I think matters a lot when you're looking at the future of this offense and the offensive product. Like, I think if you keep Gerard Mayo, there's no way you can fire Alex Van Pelt. The only way
I would agree, yeah.
The only way Alex Van Pelt leaves is if you move on from the head coach and the new guy wants to bring in his guys. Like, that to me seems like the only way. And even still, like, Andy Hart brought this up to me, or brought up this up to us, I think it was two football Sundays ago. It was either two or three. He's like, AVP's kind of always been just like a company guy. Like, he toes the company line. He does what the higher ups ask him to do. He kind of just has always just been about the football team. And there's the realistic chance that even if you did bring in new guys, they recognized his connection with Drake May in a way that they're like, oh wow, this has been going well. It's progressing well. You stay as the quarterback's coach. We're going to take play calling duties away because we're going to take care of those, but you're going to stay on as the quarterback's coach. And that's something that he may actually be amenable to, which, if that's the case, I think it's even more likely that Alex Van Pelt would stay than any other coach on this roster.
And this is where I think Mike Vrabel's last year with the Cleveland Browns as a consultant might come into play if he's hired, because Stefanski obviously worked really well with AVP. There was some reports that when AVP got fired, that was not really Stefanski's decision. It was more an executive or ownership level move. So maybe Stefanski's been saying to Vrabel, hey, that AVP guy's pretty good, right? He knows what he's doing. He can develop quarterbacks. Last year, we had five different quarterbacks, and he won games with all five of them. You know, he's much better than what we have now. And maybe a guy like Vrabel, let's say he gets hired, looks at it and says, you know what? Drake May's made progress with this guy. Yeah, things aren't perfect, but Stefanski had good things to say about him. Maybe I'll keep him around either as the offensive coordinator or, to your point, in some sort of quarterback's coach role or offensive role in general. That like so that could be an asset to AVP, the fact that Vrabel spent the past year with Stefanski. And I think I agree with you completely. If Mayo stays, I think Van Pelt should stay as well.
Yeah, Van Pelt hasn't done enough to lose his job by any means. Like, if anybody on this coaching staff outside of Gerard Mayo, like, if assuming the head coach stays, the only guys on this coaching staff, the only guy, in my opinion, that has really done enough to be like, yeah, we may need to move on from you is probably DeMarcus Covington. And, like, a lot of that may be unfair to him because he did have to deal with a lot of injuries. He is a first-time defensive coordinator and play caller. But at the same time, the defense never improved.
It got worse.
It just continued to get worse and softer. And they just couldn't tackle. And then, I mean, you saw what happened against the Chargers. They allowed 40 points. And so if there's a guy, to me, that has to be the scapegoat in order to keep Gerard Mayo in business, I feel like it's going to be DeMarcus Covington.
Yeah, and I think the big mistake they made, and going back about 12 months, because it was January 7th, I think, that Bill Belichick coached his last game. Obviously, the 11th, he was fired. The big mistake they made a year ago around this time, it wasn't so much, oh, they promoted Gerard Mayo. You look around at this staff, how many experienced voices did they really add to the staff? Like, okay, AVP had experience as an offensive coordinator, but not really as a full, I'm running the show, calling plays offensive coordinator. And you look at the position coaches, you have a lot of younger guys or newer guys. I mean, your wide receivers coach, I think to my knowledge, has never been a position coach in the NFL before. You look at defensively, you have experienced defensive line coaches, but two new ones to the Patriots, at least with Covington there. You have Dont'a Hightower, who's never coached before, coaching your inside linebackers. So I think it was not just that, hey, you promoted a young head coach with limited experience. You didn't do enough to add experienced voices around him. Even Ben McAdoo, who I think is kind of that experienced voice on offense, they said he handles third downs quite a bit. I mean, the Patriots are 29th in third down conversion percent. Better than last year, but still, right, yeah, not good. But I think they could have used more voices like that. Like, to me, not bringing in a guy like Steve Wilks, even once the 49ers scapegoated him for losing that Super Bowl, was a mistake. Or maybe not being more aggressive to retain Steve Belichick was a mistake. Like, I think just not having another experienced voice or two, especially defensively, has really hurt them, especially, again, rookie head coach, rookie DC, two guys under the age of 40 who don't have a ton of experience being coaches, let alone coordinators or head coaches. I think that, to me, when we look back on this, it wasn't just, hey, you promoted this guy with limited experience. You put an infrastructure around him that didn't have enough experience as well.
And I think Tommy Curran even said it on NBC Sports Boston. Tommy, you can hear later as well on Football Sunday here on WEEI. I think he said it this week on NBC Sports where he was like, if you asked other like teams or other personnel guys around the league to come in and just step into Gillette, like their first reaction would be like, where are all of the people? Like, where are all the football people? Because when Belichick left, he took so much with him and he took so many different tasks that were done by one or two people away from the team. And they just never hired enough people to kind of come in and fill out the entire department, like all of the departments. And so, like, I think a lot of these coaches have so much on their plate and they're so new at it in a lot of ways that it's become extremely difficult for them. There weren't enough experienced voices brought in to just kind of guide the young coaches. It was okay to hire a guy who had never been a head coach before. We see it all the time. Yeah. Especially a guy, even, you know, like Gerard Mayo, who was a top pick in the organization. You loved him. That was great. That's fine. But in order for him to have success, he needs to have a support system. And for me, like, there was just never an opportunity there to have a support system. And that's why, like, I feel like he was put in a no-win situation by the Crafts. But at the same time, things have just gotten so bad, it's almost hard to convince yourself that he should stay regardless of the situation he was put in.
Yeah, and I think when you compare it to other situations, it feels like a lot of teams, if they bring in that younger head coach, they try to surround them with either experienced voices or maybe guys that will only be there a year or two but that are head coaching material themselves. I think that's what you want. And like defensively, for years, what did we hear, Shime? Like if the defense was struggling, oh, Belichick's going to become more involved. He's going to put his hands on it. Well, in fairness to Mayo, he's learning how to be a head coach. So with this defense struggling, he probably doesn't either have the time or the wherewithal to be able to put his hands on it and become more involved. Because, again, when Belichick would put his hands more on it, he either had Romeo Crennel in those early years, or after that, he had won multiple Super Bowls. He was an experienced head coach, so it wasn't as big a deal for him to reach in and say, hey, I'm going to be more involved with the defense. We're going to do X, Y, Z differently, and this is how it's going to be moving forward. Whereas now you have a guy who's a rookie head coach, and it's like, man, it's one thing to ask him to be just the rookie CEO-style head coach, but then you put a defensive coordinator who's in his first year, a special teams coordinator in his first year, an offensive coordinator new to the organization all around him. I think, again, that put him in a little bit of a tough spot. Now, that being said, it doesn't absolve him and absolve the coaching staff of all the mistakes this year. But I think you got to add the context where a lot of organizations would have put more experienced voices around their young head coach, whereas the Patriots, they put some experienced voices like Ben McAdoo, but not enough in my opinion.
617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in this morning. Shime and Lions with you, taking you up until about 10 a.m. We'll be talking to all things Pats football all around the NFL as we get ready for Week 18. A couple games already kicked off in the final week of the season, and then the playoffs are just a week away. 379-937 if you want to text in this morning.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Shime and Lions here on Boston Sports Original, but right now it's time to get you caught up with what's trending. Boston Sports Original, WEEI, Shime and Lions with you, taking you up till 10 a.m. this morning here on WEEI, talking all things New England Patriots, getting you ready for Week 18's matchup against the Buffalo Bills. We've talked a lot about Jerod Mayo and the coaching staff in the first segment. And kind of Lions, that leads into this game here in Week 18 against the Buffalo Bills. Do you think this game has any bearing, any impact on the future of Jerod Mayo? And because of that, will we see Drake May for an extended period of time in this game?
Well, it's funny, Shime. That's really the question of the day, because I'm sure you have several, if not many, people in that organization that would be fine losing today's game, so you get the number one overall pick.
I think the majority of people should be fine losing today's game.
Yeah, right. So then you could trade down, you can get more assets, still get, you know, a left tackle of the future somewhere there in the top 10, while obviously accumulating more picks. But if you're a coach on that staff or a player on that team and you think, hey, I might lose my job if we lose this game, well, then you're going to go out there and do everything you can to win. So that's, I think, the key point here, Shime. Has Robert Kraft had any communication with Jerod Mayo already about his job being safe? And there were reports that Robert Kraft walked through the locker room in front of the media the other day after practice, which he hadn't really done all year. He hasn't spoken to the media much this year. So if he's already told Mayo, hey, man, no matter what happens against the Bills, you're safe, then I could see Mayo managing things to, you know, put a good face on it and get some development for May and at least to an extent try to win, but really be okay losing this game. But if that hasn't been communicated to Mayo, if Kraft's still on the fence or if he just hasn't told Mayo, I bet you Mayo's going to go balls to the wall to try to win this game. Because, again, what did Mayo say to you guys on the Greg Hill Show 12 months ago? That they were definitely going to win more than four games?
Correct.
He was on the record?
Yep.
So the best you can do is match that, right, and win four games? So what I want to know, has Robert Kraft already communicated with Jerod Mayo about his job security? And I think we might be able to tell, depending on how Jerod Mayo manages this game. If he goes all out, then he might be worried about his job. If he kind of takes the foot off the gas pedal in the second quarter or so, then he might have already been told that, hey, man, you're coming back next year no matter what.
Yep, I completely agree with you. I think that is the major key here, is has Robert Kraft already spoken to Jerod? Because if Jerod knows he's safe, there is no reason to win this game. None whatsoever. You should honestly just be like, oh, yeah, Drake's hand injury that he's been on the injury report for all week, not good enough, can't go today. Sorry, he's going to have to sit out. Like, that's the perfect built-in excuse right there. He sits out, you lose this football game, and you lock up the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. Everybody's thrilled. It's like, all right, cool. Now we got an opportunity to build and gain a ton of assets here for that number one overall pick and really kind of fill out this roster with hopefully some talented players. But if Jerod has no reassurances, They are absolutely going to come out and try and win this football game. Drake May will start and play the entirety of the four quarters, and they're going to try and beat down on the Bills as best they can, even if it is Mitch Trubisky and all the backups. But, and so that, to me, is kind of a major sticking point, which is why I think we, as fans, will know the future of Jerod Mayo come tomorrow morning. Like, I think it's
I think we might know, Shy, midway through the second quarter of today's game.
You might have a good feeling on it.
Yeah.
Knowing Jerod, I think there's a chance that he may know he's safe and still tries to win the football game anyways, because I think that's just who he is.
Yeah, fair.
But I think you're right. I think there can be a lot gleaned from this in terms of the future of Jerod Mayo. And for us, I think it'll be very easy to kind of figure out where he stands as of tomorrow morning.
Yeah, and I think, like, last year, you waited a few days for them to fire Belichick. You remember it was Pete Carroll and Nick Saban. They announced they were leaving. Carroll not by choice, Saban by choice. And it was 7 a.m. the next morning, January 11th, that they were mutually parting ways. Of course, we knew it was a firing at the time, but it was Thursday morning. I don't know if Mayo would get till Thursday. Like, I think
no shot. Especially because Vrabel's already interviewed with the Jets.
Right. So I think if we, honestly, Shime, if we get to 8 a.m. Thursday morning and nothing's happened, Mayo's staying no matter what. And I would even argue if we get to 8 a.m. Tuesday morning and Mayo is staying, then he's definitely staying.
Right? I agree.
Like, I think within 40, because Bill was also a little bit unique, and there may have been some push and pull behind the scenes last year about maybe them trying to work something out where Bill could stick around one or two more years and give up personnel control, or how they wanted to manage the exit. Where this situation, there's not really that gray area. It's either you want to keep this guy or you don't. You don't have the 24 years and six Super Bowls built up to try to manage on its way out. So I think if we get to 8 a.m. Tuesday and definitely beyond that, and he's still the head coach, then he's going to stick around as the head coach.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think we will know sooner rather than later. If the Patriots are going to move on, they're going to tell you quick, because they cannot afford to let Mike Vrabel be blown away in an interview if that's a guy that they really like. And to me, that was kind of the big thing, right? Like, Greg has been very much on the you have to fire Mayo and hire Mike Vrabel train. I think you have to do more of a search. But if the Patriots are super, super interested in Mike Vrabel, they cannot allow his interview processes to go on too long, because eventually there's going to be a team that is better than you and maybe in a better position than you are that blows him away in an interview. And he's like, yeah, this is where I want to be. I want to take control of this team and be the next head coach of, you know, whoever, whether it's the Bears or the Jaguars or whatever. It doesn't really matter. It's just, you can't afford to let a team blow your number one candidate away before you even get an interview with them.
And I would also add, too, and you and I talked about this before the season even began, I think there's going to be a playoff team that we look at as one of the better teams in the league that comes up short again, and they're going to maybe surprisingly move on from their head coach. If you want Vrabel, you kind of need to lock him up before that happens.
Yes.
Because again, to be clear, and I know you know this, but for those listening, we hate talking about people losing their jobs. It sucks to have to talk about, but it's just the reality of where the Patriots are.
And it's the business.
And I think not enough people appreciate that when a head coach loses their job, the lower-level assistants, the position coaches, and their families, how much it affects them. No one ever seems to care about that, and they should. I just say that to say this. If you're, and I'm just using an example here, if you're the Bills or the Ravens or a team like that that is expected to either be in the Super Bowl or win the Super Bowl and has been expected to be that sort of team the last 3 or 4 years, if one of those teams or another one comes up short again and you're Mike Vrabel, well, I'll go coach Josh Allen and the Bills. Or, hey, I'll go down and coach the Cowboys, who came up short again this year, and all that talent that's there, and it's Dallas. So if you're the Patriots, you got to kind of look around and say, hey, if we believe in Mayo, we're just going to outright keep him. But if we don't believe in him, we need to get a jump on things, because, like you mentioned, Vrabel's already interviewed with one team. There's other teams that are looking at him, and there's probably going to be a surprise team out there that gets rid of their head coach that would be very interested in a guy like Vrabel, like Ben Johnson, like Brian Flores. You know, take your pick, whoever it is. There's going to be a team like that. So if you're the Patriots, you have to kind of get a jump on things.
Agreed. 617-779-7937. John is in the car this morning. What's up, John?
Hey, good morning. First, hey, Shime, it's been fun watching your ascension through the radio ranks there. Good job to you, dude.
Appreciate you, bud.
hey, you know, you see it all the time. People look at the manager, they think he's a clown, he doesn't do anything, so on, so on. Then they get the job and they're like, oh, my God, I had no idea about everything it took to be a manager, because that guy had been doing it for a while and knows all the ins and outs and the little things. I think the Crafts had Belichick for so long, they really didn't understand everything it took, everything he did to be a head coach. Even Mayo, working pretty close to him side by side, still doesn't have all those little things down. And I think that's where a lot of this goes sideways.
Thanks for the call, John. I totally agree with him. Like, I agree
1,000%.
The Crafts got in way over their head. They wanted their football team back. They got it back, but in the process, they uprooted every different little piece of the organization that Bill had his tentacles on for the last 25 years. And they don't even know. I bet there's still jobs that Bill was doing or things that Bill was doing in that building that they still have no idea was ever even done. And then so they've just never hired people to do it or to ask other coaches to take that on. And so I think absolutely the Crafts got in way, way over their heads by firing Bill and then just immediately hiring a guy who's never done the job before.
Well, and I think if you go back over the years with the Belichick Patriots, they notoriously had one of the smallest coaching staffs
Correct.
In the league. But you look at those staffs, it wasn't just Bill. It was McDaniels at OC, Cornell and then Patricia and then Flores as DC, Scarnecki on the O-line, Ivan Fears coaching the running backs, Chad O'Shea at receivers. You had all these elite-level position coaches. You can even add Steve Belichick, and of course I know Mike Pellegrino and Brian Belichick are still here in the defensive backfield, but you had all these elite guys that could do a ton of things. I wouldn't be surprised, Shime, if there's guys on that coaching staff, more than one, that looks around some days and are like, man, I didn't realize my predecessor did all this, or I didn't realize it was all this. Because, again, you had a smaller staff, but you had such high-level people that could do so many different things at a high level, it kind of lulled you into, like, oh, we can get away with something similar.
Well, and I think on top of that, too, you had Tom Brady and, like you said, Josh McDaniels, Bill O'Brien, Charlie Weiss, all the collection of them at offensive coordinator that – Bill really never needed to get involved. He didn't. He could if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Like if there's a certain way.
And I think conceptually, like Bill would get involved where, like when they went from that early 2000s offense to the spread in 07,
Correct.
Back to the two tight ends in 2010.
Yep.
To the
it was
you know,
bigger
kind,
picture stuff. It
right,
wasn't like a week to week minutia.
Exactly. Right. He could go to McDaniels and say, "Hey, man, this week I want us to mostly throw the ball," or "Hey, this week I want us to do more gap scheme runs against their front." And McDaniels could kind of take care of it. Not that Bill wasn't involved at all, but to your point, he could rely on these people. He knew that if he brought in a free agent offensive lineman, Dante Scarnecchi would get the guy up to speed, and if Dante couldn't, then the guy wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
Right? And it's the same thing with a bunch of these guys they used to have, and they don't have that anymore.
And I think even like when you break it down to like the game day preparation, right? We've seen this now across the league, coaches mishandling under 2 minutes left in the game. And then you hear
the
Bill
end
Belichick.
End of the first half, too. Brutal.
Yeah, end of first halves, end of games. And then you hear Bill Belichick on Pat McAfee. He's like, yeah, I talked to Brady. Brady's like, I would prefer to have more time. Use the timeouts. Give me more time to figure things out. And then that's fine. And, like, hold on to one of them. But if you have three, utilize those other two and give us as much time as you can. And so Bill was like, okay, cool, I can do that. One quick conversation, all it takes between an all-time quarterback and an all-time coach. And Bill's like, yeah, I can do that. So that, you know, when you start to drive for 2 minutes, you complete a ball 25 yards down the field in the middle of the field, boom, timeout right away, zero hesitation. You can take your time getting down the field. You don't have to run. Clock's not going to just evaporate away on you, and you're leaving Tom Brady with as much time as possible. Whereas I think coaches don't talk to their quarterbacks quite the same way anymore. I don't think they're worried or they don't concern themselves enough with those end of game situations, and you're seeing teams pay for it. I mean, the Falcons just last week,
yeah,
like lose out
week.
On a beautiful opportunity to get to the playoffs, beat the Commanders just because Raheem Morris doesn't call a timeout there and give Michael Penix any more time.
Yeah, and part of this is a larger CBA discussion, but you look at the NFL compared to, like Bill Belichick said, he had that conversation with Brady in 2014, him, Brady, and McDaniels. Look at now, you have more games, but you have less practice time
Yep.
overall during the year, less time on the field in training camp itself, so you have less time to just work on managing these situations. And you look at the coaches around the NFL, lot of turnover in the last 7, 8, 10 years. So you have a lot of newer guys that have less time to work on this stuff. And it's not surprising to me that you see it get screwed up more and more, which is why those guys that get it right, you know, the Sean McVays and guys like that, are extremely valuable in those situations. And I think it's something for the Patriots, like the Chicago game, they got the end of the first half situation 100% right. I thought they did a great job.
Yep.
But you look at the Seattle game, the Miami game, the Tennessee game, like the Colts game, these end of first half, end of game situations, they've just struggled a ton, whether it's offensive play calling, whether it's just the defense needing to get a stop and not getting a stop. Like, that's been a major problem for this team. And I think that's one of those things where the coaching staff and even some of the players probably look around and say, man, we never had to worry about this with Bill, or we never had to worry about this with Josh McDaniels, or we never had to worry about this when Brady was quarterback. We had it all set. I mean, one of the reasons, Shimon, you know this, that the Patriots had a dynasty is how many games would they have where they would just wait for the opponent to screw up and take advantage?
Yeah.
I mean, we see the Kansas City Chiefs do it every single week now. I mean, the Chiefs aren't even that dominant a team, and they're 15-1 because they just wait around for their opponents to screw up, and they take advantage every single week. And we just now... that's out the door here, and they haven't picked up this. And some of it's understandable, but they haven't picked up the slack.
Yeah, and one of the things, too, you mentioned, like, the Seattle game and some of the other opportunities here this season for Jerod Mayo to just have, like, a finger on the pulse of the football game, I think has been, in my opinion, his, like, one of his biggest in-game errors is that it's just, like, there never seems to be a feel for it. I've seen John Harbaugh be on his own 32, fourth down, and he's like, you know what, we're going for it. We're down 7, we have Lamar Jackson, we're going to go for the fourth down and get the fourth down. Whereas, I feel like Jerod Mayo is so reactionary to us, right? Like, the conservative play calling happened all season long, then it became a major talking point in the city. People were asking him in press conferences and asking Van Pelt, who's responsible, why aren't you being more aggressive, blah, blah, blah. And then next thing you know, it's like week 15, and they're like, all right, let's go for it on 4th and 3 from our own 30. Like, let's do it.
Or let's do more design Drake May runs after saying we're not going to do it.
After we peppered him for weeks and weeks. Like, it feels too reactionary. It feels like he doesn't actually have his finger on the pulse of the game, because if he did, it would be like, all right, this is the spot we go. Okay, this is the spot we don't.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I think a lot of that comes from him never being a coordinator before. Because even going from a position coach to being a coordinator, there's that different level of game management responsibility that he just was not exposed to based on the jobs he had here in New England. And I don't know about you, I don't want to see him ranting and raving and yelling at guys on the sideline. Because I've heard some people say, oh, he's got to show more emotion, blah, blah, blah. I don't even, like... to me, I think if he did that too, what would we say? Oh, he's out of control. You know, he can't get a handle on his emotions. He's riding the wave. I want to see him just look like he's dialed in and has a handle on all the key situations.
Like he knows what he's doing.
Like, just like that end of first half against Seattle, we're not going to throw three straight incomplete passes, have a bad punt, and then have a bad defensive stand where we give up points, right? Where things like that aren't going to happen to us. Jacksonville, we're not going to allow them to run 18 straight times. Even if I have to send 8 guys in pressure and run blitzing, we're not going to allow them to run 18 straight times. The Colts, on a 18 or 19 play drive to win that game, at some point, we're going to mix it up, do something a little differently. And I know they're a little bit limited by personnel in some respects, but we're not going to do those. Or we're not going to call a zero blitz early in the third quarter against the Rams and give up a 69-yard touchdown.
A guy, right? You know, has thrived against zero blitz over the last couple of years.
Right. So, like, that to me, that's the thing is...
there's no sense of awareness.
I don't need him to be ranting and raving on the side. In fact, I think that'd probably be a detriment. What I need to see is, okay, these guys get it. Like, they come out of the bye week against Arizona, and they have a much better pulse than the team that we saw against Arizona. Or they come out of the second half against the Bills and don't turn the ball over 3 times. Like, that's what I want. I want to see the team, and it starts with him, but it's not only him, more dialed in and more... and at least I have more confidence, hey, these guys in this situation, more often than not, they're going to get it right. And my confidence level, at least right now, it's just not there yet.
Yeah, I feel like if there was more situational awareness with this team and this coaching staff, like, it would be a lot easier to be like, oh yeah, Jerod's coming back next year. Like, there's no doubt about it. But there's just been so many errors, so many mistakes, so many questions that can be asked that it's hard combined with the questions on the field, plus the missteps in the media and talking to the media, and on top of it, all of the losing, it just becomes it eventually becomes too much. There's
and I
too
think
many
the lack
things.
Of competitiveness too. I mean, last year's think about it. They got the worst quarterback play in the NFL last year. They were a bad team that won four games. They only had five losses last year that were by multiple possessions. This year they already have seven going into the last game of the year. So that's more games that you've been less competitive in a year later, and that's after you fixed arguably your biggest weakness, which was you got the worst quarterback play in the NFL, and even with Jacoby Brissett, and I know you were a guy, Shime, that wanted May to start week one, but I think you can agree, Jacoby Brissett was a heck of a lot better than Mac Jones last year. So you got better quarterback play from the jump and much better quarterback play once May took over, yet you've been less competitive as a whole throughout this season, and you've gotten significantly worse on defense, which was your strongest unit a year ago.
Yeah, I think you even look at a team like the Tennessee Titans, who are record-wise right exactly where you are, but I feel like in a lot of those games, they've been far more competitive. That defense has been way, way more competitive than what you've put on the field, and they've just suffered from what you suffered from last year, which is terrible quarterback play. And so, like, it's I look at a team like that, I'm like, oh, Callahan might actually know what he's doing as a head coach, and that might just be a bad roster, but they can, like, figure some things out. Whereas you look at this New England Patriots team, and it's, okay, Drake may make some awesome, awesome throws, but the team turns the ball over a ton, they get flags all over the place, and the defense is horrendous. What is this? What do they do well? Like, what does this coach do well?
Well, and I think another thing, too, is, and I know a lot of people talked like, oh, last year you played all these bad quarterbacks and you beat Mitch Trubisky on Thursday Night Football. And that's fair. And same thing the year before in 2022. But you look at it this year. I mean, Miami has 8 wins and 2 of them are against you. The Jets have 4 wins. 1 of them is against you. Jacksonville, 4 wins. 1 of them is against you. You just mentioned Tennessee, 3 wins.
Well, they have the worst strength of schedule in football.
They're losing to all these bad teams. Even Arizona, they're a 7-9 team. I don't think they're even that good. And they smoked you. Like, they dominated the game against you. San Francisco, they have 6 wins. 1 of them is against you. And I know
they're way
better
than you.
And I know they had more injuries. I get it. But it's like all these teams that have losing records, or in the case of, say, Arizona, Tennessee, Jacksonville, and the Jets that are just flat-out bad teams, not only did you lose to them, but your Jets game was not competitive. Your Jacksonville game in the second half was not competitive.
The second Miami game, not competitive.
Not competitive. Your Arizona game, not competitive. So not only have you lost to these bad teams, but you haven't been competitive in several occasions. And that's the thing where, like, you look at this Patriots team and where they're at. Yes, it's a bad roster. But if this was a bad roster, losing a bunch of games like they did to the Rams or Seattle or the Colts, that they were kind of in it and competitive, then you'd say, all right, they're making progress. They're taking steps forward. And whereas I look at this team now and I think, all right, Drake May's made progress. Marte Mapu's made progress. Other than that, it doesn't feel like any of these other guys have made a lot of progress from late July to September to now.
617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in. It is Shime and Lyons here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. It's Shime and Lyons this morning here.
On the Powers That Be podcast, we examine the players and currents behind today's most consequential decisions. Join us. Listen to the Powers That Be wherever you get your podcasts.
Boston Sports Original WEEI taking you all the way up until 10 a.m. where WEEI Football Sunday will take over. Normally, I am on that program, but I'm fortunate enough to be going to today's Patriot game. So I swapped with Dan Ball. Dan Ball will be taking my place on Football Sunday. But me and Lyons get to talk Patriots all morning long, which is always fun. Lyons, I thought it was interesting last night during the Browns and Ravens game. Warren Sharp pointed out Bailey Zappe completed a 21-yard pass, and then Kevin Stefanski immediately ran the ball 3 times and punted. And he understood the assignment because if the Patriots and Titans were to win, the Browns still had a shot at the number one overall pick. So my question to you is, if Jerod Mayo is secure in his position here and feels like the Patriots need to lose this game in order to retain the number one overall pick, what's it going to look like? Is it going to be a full game of Drake May and we're just going to see like a lot of running the football and not a lot of effort? Or are we going to see Joe Milton today? Kind of what do you expect to see in today's game?
Yeah, so in that case, I think they're going to manage it like a preseason game where May starts. And I think there's value to May starting, like one last bit of work with Cole Strange at center. Some of these receivers, like DeMario Douglas, I would expect will be back next
year.
Do
we see anything from Jalen Polk today?
So, no, I think he's already been ruled out.
Oh, he's out. That's right. I literally said that during trending earlier. Good job by me.
But I think Javon Baker, you could see quite a bit of, at least trying to get that going. But again, I think it's a preseason game style where you'd see May for a quarter or so, you know, two, maybe three series. And then I think you see a lot of Joe Milton, because the value here in Joe Milton is, can he be a guy that long term is Drake May's backup? And can you feel good about that? Because right now, Shime, as we sit here at 8:50 in the morning on January 5th, every single position group on the Patriots has some level of need. And in the quarterback room, it's the long-term backup, because I don't expect Jacoby Brissett to be back next year. So if Joe Milton can show you enough that you can say, hey, we can go into next year with him as the number two QB on the depth chart, and if May gets hurt, Milton can fill in for a game or two and we'll be okay, or we can maybe sign a cheaper veteran quarterback to supplement Milton and May, but we don't have to spend what we spent on Brissett. That in itself has a lot of value. So I think if Mayo's secure in his job, you see Drake May for two series or so, and then you see a lot of Joe Milton so they can evaluate to see, hey, can this guy be our long-term backup quarterback?
Do you think there's a chance that they outright downgrade May to out before today's game? Since
there's
the
a chance
report.
For sure. There's that phantom hand injury, right?
Correct.
That popped
yep.
up, you know, the other day. I think that would. I don't like that. And I think if you openly try to lose like that, it just, there's so many things wrong with this team right now, and they mm-hmm. are starting to really have that loser DNA inside them over the last couple of years.
It's brutal.
And I think if you openly say we're not going to try to win this game, then you start to cross into the territory of one of those loser franchises. Like, how many times, Shime, over the last 25 years have the Jets or the Lions or the Browns or the Cardinals sat guys the last week or two of the year because, oh, we're going to get the number one pick. We're going to get the number two pick. That's going to turn it all around. But it's just losing begets losing, and it gets worse and worse, and it's this vicious cycle of now every 3 years we have a new head coach. Every two or three years, a new offensive coordinator, a roster overhaul. So I know it's only one game, and it might only even be one quarter of Drake May. I just think if you openly sit him down and you sit a bunch of guys down and don't even try to start the game, that to me is a signal that we think we suck. We think we have a long ways to go. We have a loser mentality here. And I think that's something, especially with a lot of young players, can be detrimental to their development going forward.
Can I be completely honest with you?
Yes.
I think they're going to win the football game today.
You do?
Yeah. I felt that way all week long because I think last week was your opportunity, right? If you wanted to shut Drake May down, he got a head injury in that Chargers game.
Yeah.
He didn't need to come back. Could have kept him out the entire game and then be like, yep, he's in concussion protocol. Aw, shucks, can't play against the Buffalo Bills. Looks like we got to trot out Jacoby Brissett or Joe Milton. Here we go. Have fun. End the season. Number one overall pick. La-di-da. Perfect job. And then nobody questions it. Nobody's concerned because it's like, all right, yeah, they're just shelving Drake May. Got a concussion. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it. And instead, he came back in that game. They continued to get throttled. That was probably the worst game Drake May has played, maybe in his professional career up to this point. And it was a nightmare. That Chargers game was an absolute nightmare. And so now you find yourself in a spot where it's like, do we play Drake May? Well, we brought him back from a head injury against a Chargers team that we ended up losing by, 33 points to. So maybe we will. And they're going to go out and they're going to win this football game because that's just what the stupid teams do. Stupid teams go out and do stupid things. And I have total belief that this entire organization is stupid. That's kind of where I'm at this point.
And just for reference, too, if Patriots lose, they automatically get the number one pick.
Correct.
If they win
they
and the Titans
four,
lose, the Titans will get it. If the Browns will get the number one pick, if the Patriots and Titans both win. So there's still some, like, they could win this game and still have the number two overall pick, say. It's not like they're going to drop down from 1 to 9 or something like that. But, yeah, it's interesting you brought up that they put May back in the game last week. They also played May for two series behind the backup offensive line, which I thought was a big mistake and just asking for trouble. So when I look at today and what they could get out of Drake May, It's just one last opportunity for him to work with Cole Strange, who's going to be here next year, work with DeMario Douglas. Can he go a game, or at least a few series, without turning the ball over? The Patriots have turned the ball over in 8 straight games. Can they play a cleaner game going into the offseason? And then if you end up losing, but you at least put forth a good faith effort, I think it's better for your program as a whole going forward, because then you'd have the number one pick, but it wouldn't be like, yeah, we openly tank because we suck so bad. You know, we had to just lose this game no matter what.
Yeah, it's hard, though, because this is a team that, when even giving their best effort, gets slaughtered.
Yeah, so that's fair. Like, yeah, so as Andy Hart would say, you know, they're not tanking. They just stink.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably what you're going to see. Like, I fully expect them to try and come out and win and still probably lose to Mitch Trubisky in some way. Like, in my heart of hearts, I think they're going to win this football game, and it's going to piss me off. But I wouldn't be shocked if they came out, tried to win, and still lost. Like, because this team is just bad, especially with no Gonzo, no Peppers, no Polk. Like, the defense is going to be atrocious. Mitch Trubisky is probably going to throw for like 250 yards. I may bet on that
later. 500 for another QB.
Exactly. And I wouldn't be shocked if Trubisky plays a cleaner game than the rest of your offense. And it'll be interesting to see like kind of which running back gets the primary load of the carries here with Stevenson and Gibson. I would assume Gibson does. He did late in the game last week, kind of in garbage time, and Stevenson, again, has put the ball on the turf like 8 times this year. So it's just really, it's such a weird spot, man. You hate to root for a team to lose, but at the same time, God, I kind of just want the number one overall pick.
And I think another piece of this is, as we said before, these guys that are going to be involved with the number one pick, and not just Jerod Mayo, but you can add in Elliott Wolf, do they feel secure about that they're going to be here to make that number one pick or to trade down and acquire assets and use them? So that's the kind of behind-the-scenes storyline today, is how confident do those guys feel about their positions next year? Because, look, you and I probably agree, I'd love to have the number one pick and be able to trade down and acquire assets and move forward, but a lot of those guys in that locker room coaching staff, if their choice is number one pick or you win and keep your job, I mean, they're going to go out there and they're going to try to win and keep their job.
Great point by a texter, 774 texter. Watch the Pats win this game and then have to use draft capital to trade up for a better pick.
I think they'll be okay.
They'll
still be tough.
They don't drop any lower than 5.
Yeah, I'm trade down no matter what, by the way. Even if they win this game and let's say they have the 3rd or 4th pick, I still want to trade down and acquire. Like, you can get more for the number one pick, I know, but I want to stay inside the top 10, but if I'm at pick number 3 and I can go to 8 or 9, I'm all for that. I think this team has so many needs, and I think they're good enough, because I'm a tackle in round 1 guy. I think there's good enough tackles that you can get one at 8 or 9 and still have a really good left tackle there for a long time. So I am 100% team trade down no matter what happens.
Perfect. I want to get more into that actually coming up next year. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in. As we just said on the text line, not 3-7, 9-3-7 anymore.
Same number
actually
now.
Same number now. This is the first time I've been in the one chair since the number changed, because I was sick all of Christmas break, which was miserable. But same text number, 617-779-7937. So call or text on that number. Shime and Lyons will be back with you. We'll talk about what we want to see the Patriots do with, hopefully, the number one overall draft pick.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.